Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, let's call this our postseason award show. Why not, right? A few days after the season ends. And plenty of great performances and whatnot for the Green Bay Packers to talk about from the 2016 season. Your offensive most valuable player. Now, neither one of us gets to pick Aaron Rodgers, okay? That's a little too much stating the obvious here. But an offensive MVP, who you got?
Yeah, Rodgers gets his own award.
Yeah.
I wish we had like those little, you remember like in recreational sports where you have those little tiny trophies?
Yeah.
I wish we should have had one of those there, like the little plastic, like it's like painted gold. Everyone, you know, really enjoyed it. I was always a big fan of the participation trophy.
I like that.
But we'll save that for next year's planning and research and development. Be that as it may, getting back to your original point, I think it's Jordy Nelson.
Okay.
97 catches, 257 yards, 14 touchdowns, which led the NFL.
1,257
yards. Thank you.
Okay.
Trying to get recovered here after this last week. but, I mean, really, Nelson, what he did for this football team, it was only one game here at the end of the season when he came back and he played with that extra padding through the broken rib injury, but I think that said so much about what he means to this football team and really the kind of player and individual Jordy Nelson is to really push through. And he wanted to be out there. And if after missing all the 2015 season, there were so many questions, you know, with him being 31 years old, is Jordy Nelson still going to be the same receiver he was? And he answered every single one of them. And yeah, I know he said that the start was a little slower than he would have liked. He wished he could have gotten on the field a little earlier, but whatever the case, the fact that Nelson came back, played in all 16 regular season games, had the year that he did, became the resource that he was for Aaron Rodgers, I think unequivocally he was probably the offensive MVP.
The thing that impressed me the most about his season was that we saw him get back to really being the Jordy of old towards the end and the stretch run there when the offense really got hot. But even when he wasn't necessarily the Jordy of old, he was still so productive. Yeah. You know, a couple of touchdowns in the Detroit game early in the season. He had a 100-yard game, I believe it was, in Tennessee, even though that was in a loss for the Packers. But he wasn't, the Jordy of 2014 and the Jordy of 2011 that was making all these big, huge plays in the first half of the season. Yet the production, the numbers, everything, he was so consistent and he was so reliable. And then when he really started breakout in the second half of the year, it was like, wow, he really helped take the offense to another level.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's something to be said for getting your sea legs back underneath you, being able just to get that rhythm and tempo. And he talks so much about practice and how important that was. But what really impressed me is even early on in the season when he was really getting acclimated again to this offense, he didn't show a whole lot of signs of rust fundamentally. There weren't many drops at all. The fact that he was still where he needed to be on the field, that really speaks to a guy's preparation. And, you know, the Packers, they had a conservative approach with him. They wanted to be smart. They wanted to make sure he was ready for Jacksonville. I know him and Aaron Rodgers, and I remember there was that free Jordy kind of narrative that had started in the middle of training camp with wanting to get him back out there. But at the end of the day, when the Packers needed him the most during that stretch run, when they had their season, you know, kind of on the brink, Jordy Nelson was there and really stepped up in a big way.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm going to cop out on you a little bit here, Wes, because my offensive MVP, I can't pick just one guy.
Sure.
I have to pick the entire offensive line for this team, not only because you have a second-team All-Pro left tackle in David Bakhtiari, a Pro Bowl right guard in T.J. Lang, but Brian Bulaga at right tackle had maybe the best season of his career. I think it started on this offensive line with the tackles being those anchors. The edge rushers really did not give Aaron Rodgers a whole lot of trouble this year, and that's a credit to Bulaga and Bakhtiari. But then you also factor in not only the season that Lang had and playing through the injuries and coming back in 3 weeks from a broken foot, but then at center, you had a completely seamless transition when J.C. Treader goes out with the knee injury and Corey Linsley has to step in. Nobody noticed. Lane Taylor takes over at left guard in a surprise move at the start of the season, with Josh Sitton being released at the end of training camp. Again, as seamless as it could have been when a young guy like that is replacing a three-time Pro Bowler. So what this offensive line did, I thought, was really impressive start to finish this year.
Yeah, there's three tiers to this. I think the first one is looking at the scouting and personnel level. Ted Thompson, I think there's been this conversation over the years about which positions has he drafted the best. I think it's receiver, and I look at the offensive line as two that really stand out, the production that he's gotten. I think offensive line moved ahead this year. Just when you look at now, you know, David Bakhtiari's going to the Pro Bowl. I think that's the fourth or fifth guy now that Thompson has drafted as an offensive lineman that's moved on to the Pro Bowl. Brian Bulaga probably should be in that conversation as well, but yep, he plays right tackle, so a lot of times those guys don't get that respect. But then you look at the interior, Lane Taylor. This season, a former undrafted free agent in 2013 becomes a starting left guard, filling huge shoes of Josh Sitton, and there really is, he doesn't skip a beat there. TJ Lang starting to get the notoriety that he's deserved. And as you even touched on, JC Treader and Corey Linsley, two entirely different centers in their technique and what their strengths are, both having that success. Linsley being able to pick up right where Treader left off when Treader goes down with a knee injury. A big credit to them this year and what they were able to accomplish. And yeah, you're right. When you look at this passing game and how much they relied on in the second half of the season, it starts with those guys up front.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we've got some more postseason awards to hand out, and we'll do that after this. Back with more on Packers Unscripted. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here. Wes Hodkiewicz there. Wes, let's move on to the defensive side of the ball. Do you have a defensive MVP for the 2016 Packers?
Mike Daniels, I would say.
Okay.
The thing about Daniels you have to understand, and look past, you know, four sacks, look past the tackle numbers. The defensive tackles in this system, it's difficult. They have a difficult job because a lot of times they aren't going to get that notoriety. I think that's something Daniels has been battling now for the last 3 years. But you need to kind of judge them on a different scale. I think the thing that impresses me the most about Daniels, one, he had a huge role in the Packers finishing eighth in total defense this year. I should say eighth again in run defense, excuse me.
Okay.
The Packers, the way that they're structured, they made a physiological change a few years ago in what they were doing and what their plan was for their defensive linemen. They aren't really two-gapping as much anymore. They're doing different things. And Daniels was a big part of that in really filling those holes in the interior. And this is a guy, mind you, that a lot of people said coming out of Iowa was only going to be a rotational third down rusher, was only going to be a guy that could jet rush. He's proven he can do so much more than that. He's also so country strong. I mean, his ability to push, you know, guards and centers off the spot and get penetration, it's so disruptive. And I think when you look back to that game against Atlanta even, Mike Daniels was playing through the whistle still. I mean, even when the game was in hand, I was so impressed by the way he was really attacking that team. And the thing that people are going to forget, the Falcons weren't able to run the ball that well, even though they did have a lot of success in the air, but they didn't run the ball that well, and I think Mike Daniels is a big part of that. And in addition to that, it's so important to still get pass rush, still to get push from the inside, and Daniels gave the team that when really they needed it at different points in the season.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing I'll remember about Daniels specifically from this season was after we came back from the Week 2 Sunday night game in Minnesota, which was a tough loss for Green Bay, 17-14, felt like you should have won the ball game. Monday morning, I turned on the game film and was watching it, and I was absolutely blown away at what Mike Daniels was doing out there. They couldn't block him.
Yeah.
I mean, and the Packers lined him up everywhere, over the center, over the guard, sometimes over the tackle. He lined up anywhere on the defensive line, and not one of those guys was successful in holding him down on any sort of consistent level. He was a huge part of holding Adrian Peterson to 19 yards
right
in that game. He got, I believe it was, four hits on Sam Bradford, including a sack. That was a defensive effort by the Packers that really got overlooked, I think, because of some of the big plays that the Vikings hit and whatnot. What Daniels did in that game absolutely blew me away.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I don't have the exact stats and numbers in front of me, but I'd have to imagine he played a career-high amount of snaps this year. Because by the end of the year, they were using him in the dime defense, too, as one of their down linemen, which is mostly just strictly pass rush duties. He's did that sparingly throughout the course of his career, but did that a lot more. And I think that probably, when you look at the numbers for this year, probably resulted in him playing, I would guess a significantly amount more snaps than he did the previous years.
Yeah, he was definitely a guy who had a target on his back, I think, when opposing offenses would game plan against Green Bay's defense, and that does go kind of unnoticed. I need your help on picking my defensive MVP because I'm really having a hard time choosing between the two safeties, Clinton Dix and Morgan Burnett. Clinton Dix, with the 5 interceptions, took his game to a new level in his third season, makes the Pro Bowl for a third-year guy. That's a very impressive thing to do to get that kind of recognition. But then when I also look at Burnett, what he did from a versatility standpoint, you know, he'd play deep safety, he'd play in the box, he'd play nickel corner sometimes, he'd play the slot in the dime, playing inside linebacker in sort of a, you know, smallish nickel or big dime package, however you wanted to look at it. He did so many things for this defense, and there's nothing statistically that stands out necessarily about Burnett's season, but I thought he was so valuable to what was going on. So both of those safeties and what they brought to the table, I thought they were – I know the Packers' pass defense had its struggles against certain quarterbacks and in certain games, but I thought those two safeties were kind of the glue guys that helped to hold it all together.
Yeah, they did. And you have to keep in mind, too, when the Packers lost Sam Shields, Morgan Burnett became the eldest guy in that room by 3 years. and I'm talking about the entire secondary, not just the safety group. I mean, right. Micah Hyde, I think, was the next longest tenured veteran, and he was still working on his rookie contract. So right. It's impressive what Burnett did, the amount of positions he played. Like we said, he came into the season, he learned the nickel star position, what is known as the slot corner there, that playmaking position you sometimes talk about, the dime whip position. He was playing inside linebacker next to Joe Thomas on occasion, and that pseudo kind of, I think they were calling that was the hybrid nickel, the nitro nickel.
Nitro, I think that was it. Nitro was what they called it.
Different variations. Yeah. And then also just really being a leader in that room when amongst a lot of young guys. And then Clinton Dix. I think when you look at more of the statistical side of it and guys that jump out to you, you see why he got the recognition he did this year. 5 interceptions, tied for the most among safeties with Landon Collins, his former teammate at Alabama. Really took his game to another level. And I think as you talked about, Mike, yesterday, this is a young man that still sees a lot of areas where he can improve, and I think that's the exciting thing for this defense. I'm pretty sure Ha's still only, 23?
Yeah, he's awful young.
A lot of years ahead for him, and the rapport that both he and Burnett have was one of the biggest strengths of this defense in 2016.
Yeah, what you really like to see the most from Clinton Dix was not only being able to make those interceptions as a center fielder, you know, in the deep middle of the field, but then his run support also. When he's up at the line of scrimmage, he could crash in there and really disrupt the run and make a tackle for loss or at the line of scrimmage there. So a lot of good things to like. But more postseason awards to talk about. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. Wes, another category we'll throw out here quick. Breakout player of 2016 for the Green Bay Packers. Who you got?
Well, since I didn't use Nick Perry for defensive MVP, and I don't want him to walk away with any hardware here, I'm going to go with Nick Perry.
Okay.
And obviously he's a fifth-year guy, a veteran. But I think the thing that was different about him this year, one, he was able to stay healthy. We've talked about that endlessly, breathlessly. But I think the other thing is, too, is the Packers had a plan for him this year. When they brought him back on that one-year contract and Julius Peppers returning as well, they made the decision that they were going to up Peppers, or I should say Perry's snaps and you know, hold back Peppers a little bit more. I think they actually got a lot of production out of that. I think it worked. 18.5 sacks of the 40 that the team had came from those two players. And from Perry's perspective, I just don't think he had enough opportunities the last few years. We talked so much about the injury, but I think it came down, and I remember Dom Capers and Mike McCarthy talked about this at the beginning of the year. They used him so often against the run, he really wasn't used as much in those, like, down, you know, third down situations. A lot of times they were working off, you know, Peppers and Matthews and doing different things with those two guys. This year they made a more concerted effort to use Perry on a more consistent basis. His health held up, and he ended up leading the Packers with, I believe it was 11 sacks on the regular season, and then also had a, you know, a couple more in the postseason. I was really impressed with Perry this year, and even when he did have that hand injury where he had to finish wearing the club, still found a way to make an impact in those games, and that's rare. That doesn't always happen.
That's what I was going to say, too, is that you know, he wasn't able to stay healthy the entire season, unfortunately. He did have the hand injury, but then when he was playing with the club, he still found a way to make an impact, get a few sacks, and be productive, even though he wasn't really his usual self, I guess I would say. But we did see in the first half of the season, when he was healthy and being given the opportunities, he really produced for this defense, I would say. And, you know, he's one of those guys whose contract has expired now. We don't know what the future necessarily holds for him in Green Bay or whatever. But he did well for himself and really was a big part of the D.
Yeah, and I think everybody in that locker room feels good for him, because a lot of people knew what Nick Perry could do for a number of years. It was just him getting the opportunity and staying on the field and being able to show it.
Yeah, well, for a breakout player, I'll go to the offensive side of the ball, and I think I'd have to pick Ty Montgomery. When we were starting this show back in July, if either one of us had said, you know, Ty Montgomery was going to be the Packers' number one running back for the stretch run and through the playoffs, I think we both would have, you know, wondered what we were smoking or whatever. But what he did, it was really remarkable to make that transition from wide receiver to running back in season. It's not like he got off season and training camp and everything to make that switch. And, you know, the breakout game in Chicago with 160 yards rushing and a couple touchdowns. He rushes for a couple touchdowns in Dallas in the playoffs. But still also making an impact in the passing game, you know, coming out of the backfield for the swing passes, being the check down guy, taking screen passes from Aaron Rodgers, all those kinds of things. His game became a very well-rounded offensive game that became a very valuable part of what this offense was doing down the stretch, when it was kind of a mix and match thing with who was healthy and how are we going to get the job done this week.
Yeah, and the thing with Montgomery too, listening to him talk after the game and sort of reflecting on a season, this is a young man that didn't even know if he was going to make the team coming out of training camp. It's so weird to talk like that now, but he really wasn't sure. And to be honest with you, the first 5-6 weeks of the season, he didn't really have a big role on the offense either. He was mostly just being used on special teams, blocking punts, kicking, you know, kickoff returns, but nothing more really more consistent than that. So for him to come out and really respond the way he did to those more touches and more opportunities became a very vital part of this offense down the stretch. Future's very bright for Ty Montgomery. I think the Packers have done the right thing with him. He has a history and a background now working at receiver. He's now learned the running back position. That's a really dangerous weapon that they've developed there, and I'm excited to see how that evolves as they go through the next few years with him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there is still some evolution here left to go with Ty Montgomery and his role and what he can do. And don't discount the value of the Stanford smarts there in learning a new position in this offense and getting the playbook down the way he did. It was pretty impressive. But before we go to a break, Wes, we'll take care of some sponsor business. At home or here in the stands, we all know that Green Bay fans give it their all, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious Chunky Chicken Broccoli Cheese. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game, and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, before we go, let's touch on a roster move or moves the Packers made. The personnel business never stops in the NFL. But as is routine at the end of the season, the Packers select kind of a group of their practice squad players that ended the season on the practice squad, and they re-sign them to officially put them on the off-season roster. Can you kind of give us the rundown and tell us any names that stand out to you?
Well, this is kind of like when you have to, take care of a little bit of sponsorship business. The Packers have to take a little bit of, you know, a little personnel business, because the way practice squad contracts work is they're only through the regular season. So if you want to keep guys for the upcoming season, offseason, you have to just ink them to new deals. So the Packers signed 8 guys, keeping in mind that also Max McCaffrey was promoted from the practice squad before the game against Atlanta. He's already on the offseason roster. So Jacob Flores, Reggie Gilbert, Antoine Goodley, Derek Matthews, Lucas Patrick, Brian Price, Bo Sandlund, and Jermaine Whitehead were all signed to futures deals. What's impressive about that, Mike, is in addition to Price and Whitehead both having seeing time on the active roster this past season,
right,
I believe everybody except for Goodley and Sandlund actually was in training camp with the Packers as well. So quite a few of these guys went the distance, or at least were a part of the practice squad for most of the year. Packers, historically, this has been a route for guys making the roster the following year. Joe Thomas is a guy that finished the 2014 season on the practice squad and then obviously ends up being a big role in the defense here. Christian Ringo last year finished the season on the practice squad, makes it up, and spent the whole year on the active roster this season. So it is a good conduit, is that the right word, to, as far as just being able to make that next step and being able to really be able to make an impact the following year.
Yeah, these are guys that the Packers, obviously, they see something, they see the potential, they want to continue to develop these guys, give them an entire offseason, because all these guys who started as rookies, you know, they get kind of a late start in the offseason program coming in after the draft and college free agency and whatnot. So then your second year in the league, you get an entire offseason program in the NFL. You know, you're more up to speed through OTAs and everything heading into training camp. And so it's the coaches and the personnel department wanting to take a longer look at these guys and give them a shot. And as you mentioned, both Brian Price and Jermaine Whitehead were guys who spent time in 2016 on the active roster before going back to the practice
squad. Yeah, and something that's really fascinating, Mike, the Packers' 53-man roster this last week against Atlanta, do you know how many rookies were on that 53-man roster?
It had to be, I'm guessing, at least a dozen.
15. 16 if you count Ringo, who is a first-year player. That, I think, is always the exciting thing. When people talk to me about, hey, you know, what kind of progress do you expect to see from the Packers in 2017, they're never going to top out. It's always going to be a continual improvement because of the way they structure this thing with the draft and develop system. A lot of young players on this team, both with the practice squad and the 53, and I think that's one of the exciting things when you look ahead now for this team.
Yeah, well, plenty to look forward to as the offseason continues. But with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.